Hi, I'm your friend Claude.
And I am just Jamie.
And today, on the Nerd Bomber Podcast, we are going to work down our personal lists of our favorite voice actors of all time, or our lifetime. Perhaps a bit of an overlooked art in terms of mainstream pop culture, but clearly with as often as we talk about cartoons and video games and things like that in this show, it is very important to us. So let us begin the countdown.
Okay, so I have five ranked and then some honorable mentions that we can discuss later. I'm starting on number five. He is the voice of Megatron. Oh. He is the voice of Soundwave. He is the voice of countless animals and noises, and also has been the voice of Freddie Jones since like the 1960s.
Right.
Frank Welker.
At AM PM Mini Markets, you can get two hot dogs with Works.
Contains no essential vitamins or minerals, and it's only 97% sugar.
Who disturbs my slumber?
Wow, starting off with Big Frank, coming out of the gate swinging.
He's ubiquitous in cartoons for almost since they've been significant.
Yeah.
You know, the Saturday morning cartoon has never been without him. And he's in almost everything, even if you don't realize it, like I said, because he does animal noises,
right,
and baby noises, and sound effects for machinery and creatures. I mean, it's countless, and I guess it's a really marketable skill.
Yeah, it's to the point where if I see a show where there's a dog barking or like a monkey making a noise or anything like that, I just assume it's Frank Welker.
Everything but crickets, because right. Dee Bradley Baker has the market on cricket noises cornered.
Awesome. Way to lead off the picks there, sir.
Thank you very much.
I'm going with a much less legendary / well-known as my number five. And that is a man named Bo Weaver.
Next American Dad, Steve gets a gun for Christmas.
And now, our feature presentation.
Come on, let's go in. It's Lois. There she is. Let's move.
Okay.
He he has an amazing head of hair. And, and his versatility is impressive, given the fact that he's been a professional DJ since he was 15.
Wow.
Starting in the 60s. He also currently narrates the TV shows The Doctors on CBS and American Loggers on Discovery. But my personal favorite role of his and how I came to know him is as Clark Kent / Superman from the 1988 Ruby Spears Superman cartoon. It only lasted one season.
Wow. Okay. Very good. Moving on. My number four pick. He has been the voice of Tigger and the Tasmanian Devil since the 80s.
Fuck.
I think he's also picked up Eeyore lately. And he was also Darkwing Duck, among, of course, as all these actors and actresses, I should just say performers, have countless roles under their belt, but I usually just pick a few to sort of highlight. Number four on my list is Jim Cummings.
Kids, only you can prevent forest fires.
If I were you, I'd check on your buddy up there.
I wouldn't set foot in this wretched excuse for a pet store if it weren't right next door to the bank.
Oh, hi, this is Taz.
That was my number one.
Oh, wow.
You took all me right out early.
Oh.
I mean, yeah, like you
so
said,
sorry.
Darkwing Duck, I mean, but just a few of the other things that he has voiced is it just makes him an unbelievable heavyweight in the industry. Winnie the Pooh, Tigger, Tasmanian Devil.
Yep.
I mean.
Absolutely.
It's incredible.
It's so funny because I guess he was on a podcast saying that he, I don't know if this is true or not, I'd have to go back and listen to old Tasmanian Devil or, you know, watch old Tasmanian Devil cartoons. I guess he pretty much invented the at the end of the
I could believe that.
That's what he says.
Yeah. Put a stamp on it.
Back to your list, sir.
Even
though I've stolen one from your list.
Yeah. My list is now one shorter. So I guess technically number three. is a man by the name of Jess Harnell.
Oh, Xander. Oh, you trick me like that again and I'll fucking kill you. Look out, Sue! Here we come!
Baton Rouge, Louisiana, Indianapolis, Indiana, and Columbus is the capital of Ohio. There's Montgomery, Alabama, South of Helena, Montana, then there's Denver, Colorado, and the Boise, Idaho.
Another ridiculous head of hair.
Yes, I've seen it.
He has a background in everything from singing lead in rock bands to announcing for America's Funniest Home Videos to video games as the voice of Crash Bandicoot, but he's perhaps best known as Wacko Warner, the middle child from the Animaniacs.
He did the awesome States and Capitals song on that show, of course. It was really good. Yeah, he was really good. He came across my my what's the word I'm looking for?
Radar?
My line of sight, my radar, and I kind of went on and I went beyond him, but I considered it. I considered it. All right, so number three on my list is the voice of Doug Funny, Roger Klotz, Ren from Ren and Stimpy, Philip J. Fry, Professor Farmsworth, Zap Brannigan, and Zoidberg, all from Futurama. It is Billy West.
Dear Journal, it's me, Doug.
I may not be the president.
Yeah.
Quiet!
Zoidberg could eat. You need a new president? Zoidberg will serve.
Excellent choice. I did not know he was a voice of Doug, but now I can totally hear it and I can't unhear it in my brain.
It's funny. You can really hear it in terms of Doug and Fry being connected and Ren too.
Right.
And a little bit of Roger Klotz. But when you start talking about Farmsworth, Brannigan, and Zoidberg, it goes so far outside of that sound.
Right.
That he's pretty adaptable in that way. Like, those characters don't sound anything alike, in my opinion.
No, yeah.
And I guess I've heard, too, that when he performs two of his characters, he'll do it in one live sitting.
That's
them
crazy.
Talking to each other, which is a couple of other voice actors who are known for doing that. But it's pretty impressive, especially when you talk about Fry talking to Brannigan or Farnsworth or Zoidberg. They're so different.
Right.
And apparently he can do it pretty seamlessly.
That's awesome. My next pick is an Irish-Canadian man by the name of Cal Dodd.
Just let me alone with those clowns for 5 minutes. Just 5 minutes.
We have five construction workers trapped 20 stories up. Buildings are unstable, and aftershocks are rolling through the region.
Okay, I have heard enough. Go to your room. Mattresses.
Okay, all right.
Who, of course, is most well-known for providing the most iconic version of the voice of Wolverine. In the X-Men cartoon and in video games and other cartoon series. But he's also another guy with a ridiculously well-accomplished background in music. He's got like 7 or 8 albums from as far back as the 70s.
Right.
And he's done so many commercial voiceovers of things that you know and would recognize that it's crazy.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, he's an impressive man.
And like I said before, a lot of these performers we're going to be mentioning have so much under their belt.
Yeah.
You hear them in places you don't even know. You know, there's the characters they're known for. Then you start talking about sound effects and background voices,
right,
and voiceovers for things like commercials and TV shows. And it's pretty impressive, some of their prodigency. Prolificness? I think I just made up a word when I said prodigency, but I like it. So I'd like to have that be a part of the vernacular henceforth.
It is official Nerd Bomber slang.
Prodigency. Okay, so I had trouble with my top two. The one I'm about to mention is in that the number two spot, essentially for one character. And he still almost had a shot at my number one slot, even though it's just basically for one voice. He is the voice of Optimus Prime, Peter Cullen.
We're Autobots. We're from Cybertron, a planet far from Earth. Those who tried to harm you are called Decepticons.
Well, not everywhere. Just finished it this morning.
The spell is broken. She must be stopped.
Of course.
I don't pick him for his prodigency, but I pick him because of that one character, and Optimus Prime is awesome, and
right.
So he's awesome for playing him.
I also think that he was a great Eeyore.
Yeah, he did do Eeyore. He's done other things, obviously,
yeah.
But... he was the voice of he did a voice in Disney's Treasure Planet, which is an overlooked animated series. He was Captain Arrow, and I really like that. And it gets overlooked, of course.
Mm.
But and he too has a very prolific career.
Right.
But I just happen to like Optimus Prime.
Right.
You no longer have another number one on your list.
Well, I have a new number one now.
All right.
My number one is gone, and actually, it might have worked out for the best, considering this Chuck Jones quote about this performer. June Foray is not the female Mel Blanc. Mel Blanc is the male June Foray.
Wow, okay.
So, of course, it is June Foray.
Can't take my eyes off you for a second. Let me warn you, Sylvester, for absolutely the last time, if there's one little feather, just one little feather harmed of this bird, I'm going to sell you to the violin string factory.
Your great, big, wonderful moose. Maybe you could see to it that Hard Knocks wins next Saturday.
Bullwinkle, you can't do that!
Crappy Gummy, you have the manners of a billy goat. Bless you, child. Of course we'll get you a drink.
Who probably was best known overall for providing the voice for Rocky the Squirrel from Rocky and Bullwinkle.
Yeah.
A ton of other well-known things, ranging from Cindy Lou Who in the animated The Grinch Who Stole Christmas cartoon. She played the granny who owned Tweety Bird on the Looney Tunes cartoons. She played Grammy Gummy from the Gummy Bears that we mentioned in a different episode.
Yes.
And how I came to know and love her was as Magica Dispel on DuckTales.
Wow, okay.
She's another one. She worked a ridiculously long time. She was, I think, working right up until she died at age 99. And she is kind of like Jim Cummings in the sense that she's done so many random little voices and additional characters, but you could always kind of hear it. I remember when I was a kid even, just hearing like a one-off character that sounded like her. I would watch the end credits to see if I saw her name. Sure enough,
there it was.
Yeah, she's quite an impressive figure.
Yeah, definitely. All right, so my number one is, it might be an obvious one. He was the voice of Yakko Warner from Animaniacs. He was the voice of Pinky from Pinky and the Brain. He did a voice on Biker Mice from Mars, but most importantly, he voiced my favorite character, one of my favorite cartoons of all time, as Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, the voice of Raphael, Rob Paulsen.
Oh, sorry, Sensei. I guess I was a little steamed because I blew my assignment. I'm taking a correspondence course from Pinkerman's Private Peepers to be an undercover detective.
This looks like a job for the Cape Chameleon!
Sorry, little fella, but I'm no hero. I'm just a TV actor.
Okay, come on, Mr. Elevator. Time to move. Let's go. Come on. Help! Help! Help!
What for, Brain? All right, to take over the world, sorry.
Excellent pick.
Yeah, and he's in a lot of other stuff, too. He was in, you know, I think he was in, like, the Mask cartoon.
Yeah.
And different things over the years, so I think he later played Donatello on a different iteration of the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles.
Right.
And he actually hosts a podcast called Talking Tunes where he does interviews with a lot of these other kind of voice actor people that he knows. It's very fascinating and interesting to listen to. And, he's just that part of Raphael is just so important to my nostalgia and pop culture history.
Right.
But obviously he's had a very prolific career in other ways.
Yeah, and he's also, I mean, in a different type of way, a less bombastic way, he's got such a distinct voice.
Right, absolutely. So that covers my ranked listing, but I've got some other names here that are worth mentioning. So we can go through those and discuss them if you'd like, and if anything occurs to you, we can do the same.
I am curious.
So I've got D. Bradley Baker on here. It's funny because his career, it's definitely not based on characters, but if you've watched a cartoon in the last 10 to 20 years, you have heard his voice. He's kind of like Frank Welker. He's every background animal, every, you know, books falling off a shelf. You know, he's that kind of stuff. It's kind of crazy. Like, you don't need a Foley artist if you've got D. Bradley Baker there.
Nice.
Next on the sort of unranked general mentions list is Tress MacNeille.
Yeah.
She's done a lot of significant stuff over the years. Again, very prolific. She's, you know, Agnes on The Simpsons. She plays, actually, Dot Warner on the Animaniacs. We've covered all three Animaniacs siblings now. So, again, very important to the field, I guess, the profession of voice acting. Two performers from the same show, The Simpsons, Harry Shearer and Hank Azaria. A couple of these people I have next on the list have careers that far exceed just doing voice acting. They've all done live action. They've all done some big-time movies. Hey, you know, Harry Shearer obviously has done, you know, Spinal Tap and a bunch of Christopher Guest movies.
Right.
Hank Azaria has done a bunch of big-time Hollywood movies. But they're both pretty well-known for doing all of these Simpsons voices, too. And again, I think Harry Shearer, much like Billy West, is known for doing two characters' voices in one recording.
Right.
So when he'll do Montgomery Burns and Smithers, he'll just go back and forth between their voices as they have a conversation. So it's pretty cool to sort of imagine that happening. And Harry Shearer obviously does a bunch of voices on The Simpsons also.
Principal Skinner?
Up yours, children.
Okay, the next two, like I said, have pretty far-ranging Hollywood careers beyond voice acting. One is Clancy Brown.
Oh, yeah.
He's been sort of the voice of countless ogres and trolls and monsters and demons. He was the voice of Surtur on the recent Marvel movie Thor Ragnarok.
Right.
But also, strangely and amazingly and awesomely, he's the voice of Mr. Krabs on SpongeBob. And it's just, it's so far, you know, outside of type for him.
Yeah, you know, I want to say he played a version of Wolverine at one point, too. I could be wrong, but I think I'm right.
I wouldn't be surprised.
Yeah.
The next guy I'm going to mention also played Wolverine, but is most known for playing the Joker, and that's Mark Hamill.
Ah.
Of course, Mark Hamill's Luke Skywalker will always be Luke Skywalker. Right. But for some people, he will also always be the Joker.
Absolutely.
And then the last one I have here that I was going to mention was one that you sort of shortly mentioned earlier was Mel Blanc. The original voice of Bugs Bunny.
Of course.
You can't talk about voice actors without talking about him and Bugs Bunny and the fact that he also did other voices within the Looney Tunes pantheon and beyond.
Right.
And he was one of the original sort of, if you can call him a celebrity for being a voice actor, he's about as close as you can get to that.
They don't call him the man of a thousand voices for nothing.
Absolutely.
Yeah, I don't know how you can top that or really add any much of anything else, so I'm not going to try.
Very good.
I'm going to let my voice cease to be heard on this episode. So that'll do it for us on this installment of the Nerd Bomber podcast. But stick around for the debut of our new collecting focus segment called Need It, Got It. Greetings, collectors. Welcome to Need It, Got It. I'm here with Cousin Adam, and today we're going to talk comics. Well, we were just talking about how, alluding to a previous episode of Nerd Bomber, where we discussed visiting the Ithacon comic convention, and I talked about how I'm not a traditional collector of comic books. I think mostly because, certainly while growing up, I didn't have really the resources or the funds to... Mm-hmm. Chase down, you know, whatever amount of issues were in a certain story arc. Because, you know, as we discussed, it's hard. Like, you have so many different titles that the story runs through. So you end up, you know, I don't have the information in front of me either about, like, the average number of books for a certain story arc. But, you know, I don't think it would be surprising to get up to, like, 10 or 15 by the time it's all done, especially for, you know, a longer story.
Right.
So yeah, I mean, I kind of just got them wherever I could. Certainly wasn't going to be actually subscribing to any comic books. I don't know what that must have been like as a kid to get them in the mail.
Yeah, I was going to say, I actually did start subscribing to one when I got a little bit older, when I was more of like a teenager, so I had like a little bit of my own money and I could like give my parents the money to pay for it. I actually started subscribing to the Sensational Spider-Man.
Nice.
It actually ended up being like my least favorite Spider-Man book, which is funny. But yeah, it's because I got it in the mail like every month or whatever. But yeah, you're right about that whole, you know, the sheer number of it. I mean, if you couldn't tell already, my favorite book was Spider-Man this was like, you know, early to mid, you know, even into the late 90s. There were at one point when I was reading Spider-Man, I mean, there were like five or six different Spider-Man books alone. You know, there was like just the single titled Spider-Man. There was like The Amazing Spider-Man, Spectacular Spider-Man, The Sensational Spider-Man, The Web of Spider-Man, Spider-Man Unlimited. You know what I mean? It was crazy.
Spider-Man 2099.
One of their biggest storylines they did was the Maximum Carnage storyline that spanned like every title. And it was like 20 or something, you know, different issues. And where, you know, Carnage goes on a rampage and, you know, he gets all these villains and they start going crazy. And then, you know, Spider-Man's got to team up with Venom, you know, Captain America steps in. It was a really popular and fun storyline to read. But like you had to buy every issue of Spider-Man, you know, in different titles, you know, multiple times over a couple months to get the whole story. You know, it was crazy. It just kind of got out of hand. But right. Yeah, so that, I just wanted to throw that in there when we were talking about it. So
yeah, I guess I became aware of comics, or, you know, interested in actually getting them probably at some point in the late 80s. The first kind of comic thing I ever owned was it was weird. I used to, my exposure to comics was always in these like kind of bargain packs that you could get in like discount stores,
right?
And the first kind of set like that I ever got, it was it was like mini comics, almost like the kind that you would have found that they packed in with like a He-Man figure or like a Superpowers Kenner figure or something. But it was like this weird set of, there was like a Spider-Man story, a Captain America story. I'm not sure who else, but they also, I think, came with like trading cards. It's very weird. But I used to read those. I think there was 4 issues total, and I used to read them like over and over again. And, I remember I had a similar one with Batman. I think it was kind of tied in with the 89 movie. Like, they were just flooding all the merchandise they possibly could at that point.
Right. So
I got a couple of Batman comics in a bag with like some like cut out cardboard cards. And I still remember to this day, like, how dark this particular Batman story was. It actually depicted it was about a guy, the criminal, like preying on women or something. And this one woman had enough, and she like fought back. He like grabbed her, and she pulled out like a straight razor, like an old fashioned like Sweeney Todd razor, and slit his fucking throat. And like, they show him dying, and like, it's kind of actually pretty sweet how they did it. Each successive panel, just like, it's him laying there, but the image, it just gets darker each time until it just like fades to black. And for some reason, that stuck with me like to this day. I can see it clearly.
And well, I can see why.
Right. And that's actually one issue I've been looking for ever since. Like, when I go to these conventions, I have no idea really how to find it, but it's just like kind of this one, like, it's like my comic book white whale, you know?
Yeah.
The elusive catch that I'm always searching for, I guess.
I mean, yeah, you gotta be able to find something like that on eBay or no. I mean, it's a lot easier to find things like that now that, you know, they're so prevalent, you know, on the online marketplace. But
yeah, definitely.
I mean, do you even remember like what was on the cover, or do you remember that scene? That's probably why it's difficult. You're gonna have to
remember that
find
scene.
Someone that has like a huge, no, yeah, like, remember that scene?
I remember the there's like one weird line of dialogue. Actually, the woman, I think, was a reporter, and she, like, they were looking at the crime scene or something. Or no, okay, no, this was, I'm confusing the women, but there was a woman reporter after the, like, the guy died, and they were looking at the crime scene, like Commissioner Gordon was there or whatever, and they wrote it as like, they were trying to analyze who this guy was, and they used this weird word bunko, like he was a bunko type. I don't know if that meant like bum or something, but like, the way they wrote it, she said, bunko types don't usually do something like this or whatever. Something like that. And I remember I read it as, because they only use one M to write, So I was like, HM bunko types don't usually. And I was just like, what the hell does that mean? For some reason, that's always stuck in my brain too. I've actually, I've typed in bunko types. I've typed in everything in Google. Batman bunko types.
Yeah, who is that? You know, that, you know, you gotta do weird stuff like that to get your search down. But I remember the first comic I got, they actually sold it in the coffee shop at the hospital.
Really?
Where my parents worked, and it was like Eastman and Laird's Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles #1. Now, it wasn't like the violent, you know, this is like when they did the comic line because of the cartoon. I think it was like in 88 or 89 that this issue came out, but I remember specifically that was like the first one I got. But yeah, it was weird because like comics like were sold in weird spots too, you know, throughout those days. Like, I remember in Cortland, it was Tony and Jerry's Deli on Central Ave is where you'd go to get your comics, if that's what it was, you know. Actually, most of my comics I did get, though, was the Twilight Book and Game satellite store inside the Carousel Mall.
Right.
Because they did have do they still have that giant store on South Salina? Is that still there?
I haven't been on that end of Salina Street in 4 years, but it was there last time I went.
Okay. Yeah. I mean, I would say that it would still be there. I mean, comics, you know, are probably, I mean, they might not be as popular as they used to be, but I mean, I know that like trading card games like Pokemon and Magic are still around. I think that was like one of their big selling things was the card games like Magic and stuff like that too. So,
right.
Well, I'm sure they're still around, but.
It's sort of related, like the progression of comics that we experienced as kids, like starting in the late 80s where everything was kind of still dark, you know, Batman, the movie was like, it made Batman dark again. It was popular. It was based on, not based on, but it took kind of like tonal cues from the Dark Knight, Returns, the Frank Miller book.
Mm-hmm.
And, so I think they were just kind of doing that in general in the comics at that point. But then kind of that trend gave way to what I remember very, not necessarily fondly, but being very prevalent about comics in that time period as it went into the 90s, was all of the crazy gimmicks and, like, you know, special versions of issues that came out. Mm-hmm. And I had so many of those. I fell for that so hard. I like bought all these like versions and like weird covers and things thinking they'd be worth more. And boy, it was, it turned out to be kind of, just exactly that, just an empty promise to get you to buy the book. But I mean, they were fun. They were cool looking, but I'm talking about things like die cut covers, like, you know, things being in fancy poly bags, just like extra merchandise, like cards being included, glow in the dark covers. I mean, you name it, they did it, like foil stamped and embossed. All that kind of stuff, holograms.
Yeah, I remember having a couple Spider-Man issues where they were like anniversary issues that had hologram covers, and they were actually worth a little bit more, and I kept them. But, you know, I mean, this is the thing that sucks about our days of collecting. It's kind of the same thing with, like, the toy collecting, too, is that people started to save them and not read them, or they wouldn't take the toy out of the package, and they would hold on to them because they knew that these old vintage toys were worth a lot of money if you kept them. But then everybody did that. So now all these people have saved them and not used them or read them or taken them out of the package thinking that they were going to be worth a lot of money. But now that they're so prevalent in mint condition, they're just not worth as much as like those old vintage things were, you know?
It was always, you know, it was like a rarity with the original stuff to find like one in good condition, which is where your high value comes from. But yeah, when everybody is trying to preserve everything, then there's no demand, there's no market, there's supply is all that you got.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, did you have, like you said, you had what, Spider-Man issues that had some of the gimmicks, some of the holograms or something on them?
Yes. Yep.
I had,
they were like anniversaries or something. Yeah.
My big introduction into the gimmick phase of comics was actually the very divisive Death of Superman event in 93. I have, for a time, I believe it was issue 75 where it actually happens, and for a time I think that was the original version, the original issue was somewhat valuable. I don't know what it's like today, but I got, and I thought it was, you know, this huge thing, I got this, again, this set of comics that had, like, a different version of that issue with, like, a special cover, and, like, it had a lot of the connecting issues from later in the run from the different Superman titles. So you could actually kind of make one purchase and follow the story, and they, of course, all had different, like, one of them, the cover was, like, cut out in the shape of his, like a picture of his chest, and it had a cutout. And when you opened it, like you saw that it was like the robot Superman behind it. Cause there were like what, four or five different alternate Superman that like you had to try to guess which one was going to be the real Superman. It was this huge thing. Another one I had, it was very weird. It was like, I think it was a glow in the dark cover, but it was also like heat activated or something. It was really weird. But yeah, so that's the one that got me kind of, I guess, back into collecting comics, and also kind of really gave me the biggest dose of these 90s gimmicks that I mentioned.
Yeah, definitely. Well, I remember a lot of it too was that kind of the comics equivalent of Beckett was the Wizard Price Guide magazine that came out, you know, and we loved that thing. I mean, I totally had like every issue when I started, you know.
Missed that to this day.
But I mean, they were, yeah, they smell my most intimate of areas. They are moist. That's one of my favorite issues. It was a Halloween costume issue, if nobody knows what we're talking about. But yeah, I mean, they were kind of like one of the biggest purveyors of that, because they would always do that advertising and they would give you pricing information like, oh, if you have this variant cover, it's worth more than this one. You know what I mean? So they kind of fed into that, you know, the whole industry just kind of, it was like a, it fed itself, you know, and like the machine kept working, and that's kind of what happened, you know, just their fault.
Yeah, it was also, well, it's weird, as much as the 90s was like a gimmick era for comics, it was like also, and just in publishing in general, like an era of everything being extreme. So a lot of the superhero titles kind of went that way. You had, I think there at one point you had like Extreme X-Men, and then like, you know, a lot of the newer characters were designed to be more quote unquote extreme. And then you had, like magazines like Wizard are an example of, I guess, an extreme, kind of mindset when it comes to like the teenage market, because I mean they were there was like a certain level of swearing in there. There was like kind of pretty adult humor. There were other magazines at the time that, you know, we were the target market. It was a great time to be a teenage boy in the mid-90s.
Definitely. There
was a magazine, a short-lived magazine called Flux, FLUX. I don't know if you ever came across that, but that was like, yeah, that was super. I mean, it was probably, in terms of like the writing and everything and the topics, it was definitely adult. But, you know, it was always talking about video games and comics and stuff. So it was still kind of marketed and kind of controversial. It was actually the first place I ever saw a still shot of that infamous part in Who Framed Roger Rabbit, where you can see Jessica Rabbit doesn't have any underwear on or whatever.
Oh, yeah.
They were the first ones to bring that to my attention.
Gee, that was an oversight, I guess, right? the animators didn't do that on purpose.
Yeah, right. I mean, but yeah, it was an interesting trend. Like, everywhere you looked, everything was extreme, and everything was, I mean, it was cool because it just seemed like the industry was sort of pushing the boundaries and figuring out how far they could go. I was happy to be a guinea pig.
Yeah, me too. I mean, I'm not going to complain about it. There are some good memories there. I definitely remember that. Doing our own little first radio shows on a tape recorder with reading stuff out of Wizard. Yeah, that's how we started. So we're getting there, buddy. We're getting there.
Yeah, full circle. Speaking of circles, remember Pogs?
Yeah.
We got to talk about that someday. But I think that'll bring this installment of Need It, Got It to a close. We'll catch you next time, collectors.
Got 'em, need 'em, need 'em, got 'em, need 'em, got 'em, need 'em, got 'em, need 'em.
Bomber Podcast is a Ghost Factory Internet production brought to you by the WEM Network.